Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, I chat with an acrobat and juggler from Cirque du Soleil. Then a queer pole dancing and cabaret show takes to the stage one last time at Club Oasis. And historians and travel writers are sharing some fun San Francisco history. Today's show is about moving and grooving and learning. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Cirque du Soleil is back in San Francisco, and their latest show is called Echo. Echo is about a young woman and her dog who find a mysterious cube, and the cube takes them to another world where humans and animals bond. Discovery, empathy, and protecting the environment are a few of the show's themes. And you can see Echo under the Big Top at Oracle Park in San Francisco beginning November 20th. I spoke with two artists who are in Echo. Philip Zupuy is a juggler from Montreal, and Neil Quarter is an acrobat from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We chatted at KLW's downtown San Francisco venue, and they shared with me what it's like performing under the Big Top. Neil Quarter, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. And Philip Zupuy, hello.
Zupuy, yes.
Okay, hello, hello. Hi. Welcome. Y'all look fabulous. First of all, I want to give the listeners an idea of what you look like. So, Neil, you have on a white suit.
Yes, white, and it's made to look like crumpled paper. So these costumes that we're wearing, they're kind of vacuum sealed for 2 weeks to achieve this effect.
Oh, so. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you have like some face paint on.
Yeah, we apply all our makeup ourselves. It takes maybe around half an hour, depending on the look. So, okay. You know, we do it for every show.
Okay. Okay. So the makeup that you have on, like I see, like it's like white and like a black trim under your eyebrows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some like black contours and the white eyebrows and some contours up here. And, you know, it's the whole works.
And with a little, white square on your bottom lip.
On the bottom of the lip. I think it's supposed to represent like the pincers of an ant. So the character that I play in the show is an ant character.
Oh,
so
if that
gives you sort of an idea.
Okay. And then Philip, you have this, you look like a cloud.
Yes.
Okay. You look beautiful too as well. So their suit is blue and white. It looks like the sky. Like it looked like you literally brought the sky here.
Yeah, I bring the sky. It's a full suit.
Yes.
And I had the dog head.
Yes. And then you have the dog head. And also too, you have on face paint, you have on this beautiful, rich blue, sky blue face paint, kind of around the perimeter of your face. So you guys look beautiful. I want to talk about what in the world made you want to go into the circus. So who wants to go first?
For me, I started in high school. So okay. It was like a sport that we used to do. We can, in the sport classes, we had tennis, baseball, and then circus.
Uh-huh.
So I started in high school.
So they had circus in school?
Yeah.
In Montreal?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And we can try juggling, aerial, silk, like a tissue, you do acrobatic in it, and stuff like this.
Uh-huh.
And after high school, I went to a circus school in Montreal.
Okay.
That is specialized in circus.
Okay, wow. So they teach, so some schools in Montreal, they teach circus.
Yes.
Like, performance and circus art.
To become a professional circus artist.
Okay. And I imagine, is it because circus is very big there? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Montreal, the circus in Montreal is a big part of the cultural aspect.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't been to Montreal yet. It's on my list of places that I want to visit.
Very cold.
Yes, I know. Yeah. When I see the pictures, it looks gorgeous. And you juggle all kind of things.
Yes.
I saw a video of you. You had like 12 balls or something that you were juggling.
Yeah. In the show, I use two types of balls.
Uh-huh.
There's juggling ball in the air.
Uh-huh.
It's more like, we call it bean bags.
Okay.
It's a soft ball.
Okay.
And we have also bouncing ball that we hit on the floor and then bounce back.
Okay.
And that's some like silicone balls.
Okay. And then I've seen you do flips and juggle.
Yes.
Amazing, Philip. Okay. And Neil, you're an acrobat.
Yes.
Flying through the air.
That's right. Well, my path was a little bit different from Philippe's. I was an artistic gymnast growing up. So like the traditional gymnastics that you would see at the Olympics. I did that all throughout, you know, when I was a child, middle school, high school, and then I competed in gymnastics in college for William & Mary, which is a university in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Right.
So I did that. And then afterwards, you know, things worked out the way I had hoped. And, you know, I joined Cirque du Soleil not too long after, so.
How long after did you join?
Well, I was, I performed in Orlando for a year with Disney, and then I moved out to Las Vegas to perform with a Dragon production, which isn't Cirque du Soleil, but it's sort of something similar that you would see from Cirque. And then after the pandemic is when I joined Cirque du Soleil with a show called Michael Jackson One.
Which I've seen, which is fabulous show.
Oh, well, yeah. Great. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. And it was so funny because at the end of that show, there's a hologram of Michael Jackson.
It is. Yeah. It's like a very cool technical feat that they pull off with, you know, like mirrors and other sorts of things. So
I was in a very Vegas mode. If you know what I mean, when I was watching this show, I was with my friends, and I didn't know it was a hologram. So I was like, wow. And then we were sitting kind of far in the back. And I was like, that guy's good.
Well, we brought back Michael Jackson from the dead.
It was Michael Jackson hologram. I was like, he's really good. And my friend was like, girl, stop. And I said your name wrong, right? It's Philippe.
Philip.
Okay, so I did say it right. Okay, I just want to make sure. Was your family scared for you? Because...
Oh, I mean, I've been a risk taker my whole life, really. So I occasionally, when I'm traveling, will do handstands in various places, you know, but...
You were that kid flipping off the cat.
Yeah, but, you know, it's fun, and I always, you know... Good. Keep it within the safe limits. But, you know, things like this, we have a lot of different safety mitigation measures that we use on stage, such as like safety harnesses if we're going above a certain height, and just different protocols that we use to make sure that we're absolutely safe. But, you know, there is still the element of risk, but we manage it really well here.
And I was talking with you earlier from Louisiana, and I was like, oh, you're around all that good food.
Oh, yeah.
You got to stay in shape.
Well, I love to go home and eat the food and visit my family whenever possible. So,
was your family concerned for you? Like, because some people, they juggle fire and do all kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Do you do that?
I never juggle fire.
Okay. So, or knives?
Safe, not knife.
Okay.
I think if I do it, I can do it. But I never tried it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're not as worried then. It's probably his.
Yeah. It's more safe. Yeah.
How many Cirque du Soleil shows have you been in?
I replaced for a few weeks when I was 17 in a show called Crystal.
Okay.
Back in Montreal. It was an ice show.
Oh, wow.
So I was doing ice skating and juggling at the same time.
Wow.
And then Echo.
Okay. And then Echo. Okay. Wow, ice skating and juggling at the same time.
Yes.
That's amazing. You all are athletes.
I didn't know you did that, Philippe.
Yes.
that's amazing. So let's talk about Echo. So I understand that the title is a pun on like ecology.
Yeah, I would say the show has like undercurrents of environmentalism, but really the show is kind of, it follows Future, our main protagonist, who is... you know, she portrays a young girl and her dog, Iwe, portrayed
that
by Philippe.
You're the dog! Okay.
Yeah. And so they go kind of on an adventure where they're discovering a strange world full of animals and this giant enigmatic cube that we have as a set piece on our stage. And it's just kind of a message of be the change you wish to see in the world, kind of.
Yeah, because I understand the humans and the animals bond and they try and create a better world. What does that mean to you, Philip? Did you play the dog?
After the dog, that is called Iwe.
Okay.
Iwe the dog. And I'm trying to link the animal kingdom and the girl Future, the make a link between both of them, because I'm like a hybrid half human in a suit, like a blue suit.
Yes.
And with a head of dog.
Yes.
So I'm trying to support her through this discovery of animal kingdom and self-discovery.
Yeah. You know, that's what I like about Cirque du Soleil is that it tells a story. Mm. You know, it tells a story and it makes us escape. And it's so magical. I thought it was interesting, too. And my producer, Perfira Rango, pointed this out to me, how there's no animals in Cirque du Soleil. But we see this story about an animal and a human and... you know, bonding together. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with juggler Philippe Zupuy and acrobat Nia Quarter. They'll be performing a Cirque du Soleil show called Echo, and you can see them under the big top at Oracle's Park in San Francisco from November 20th to January 18th of next year. What you both do is art, but it is also a lot of physical work. It's a sport to me. It's definitely athletic. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how those meet for you, the being an athlete and being an artist? Like, what's that meaning to you?
Yeah, that's it's funny that you say artist and athlete, because we really are kind of a hybrid between the two. And I started out as just an athlete where, you know, the sport of gymnastics, it's very rules based and you have to construct your routines a certain way. But when you get on a Cirque du Soleil stage, you have so much more freedom, and you're also working with other people on stage to create something as a group. So it's a lot of collaboration. It's a lot of creative freedom, emoting as well, and acting a little bit as well. So coming from that background as an athlete, it's definitely puts you out of your comfort zone a little bit, I would say, to begin. But it's really been an enjoyable journey, I would say.
What about you?
And I think when we're on stage, the big difference between being an athlete and an artist is we always have in the back of our head that we do for someone that is watching us, the performance. Mm. And we have to include the public, and we have to make contact sometime with them. And yeah, I think it's not only on focus on you, it's with everyone that's watching the show. And
yeah,
it's a shareable, athletic, artistic.
Yeah, because the big top is, you know, it's quite an intimate venue. So yeah, the first rows are even closer from me to you. So the people, you know, even anywhere in the big top, it's sort of in the round, a stage in the round. It feels like they're part of the performance, which is something that we value.
When you all are performing, do you get lost in the performance, or are you both like, okay, I need to move this way, I need to move that way, but I also need to look like I'm flowing? You know, how do you balance both of that? I guess that goes back to the art and the athlete too as well, especially I'm thinking about it with you, mm-hmm. because, you know, you're an acrobat and you do some really dangerous and courageous things that I can't do, but I would love to do if I had the courage.
I would say that there's definitely certain movements, especially around our acrobatics, are very technical and technique focused, so that we have to do them a certain way. And just the fact that we do the show 8 times a week normally, so it's a pretty heavy schedule, you know, those variables have to stay consistent. But you do still have, in certain parts of your acts, the creative freedom to, you know, experiment and to play with mm-hmm. the audience and to try something different. So it's really kind of a mix, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, because you all usually get the audience like clapping and cheering. Mm-hmm. And what about for you? Because you're juggling all kind of things. Mm-hmm. Are you just really concentrated on juggling? But you're also doing flips and probably some dancing too. So, yeah, I'm like, how are you able to do that?
I think when we get the technical aspect very, very like clean, and we look for juggling, I have to juggle 7 balls and not drop them.
Right.
So when I know I can do the 7 ball, after I can put that aside and then more concentrate on my acting skills, that I know the technical part is fine. I can do the 7 ball, but I have also with my face to do to act, and every night is different. Mm-hmm. So some night I will drop the balls, so I have to improvise and to make the drop of the ball part of the choreography and the technical part. But once I really have the line of my act technically, I feel like we can have a freedom of acting in this line.
Okay. So once you got it, you have it down, then you just, you know, yeah, how to just,
and like Neil say, we do it so many times a week that it's repetitive, and we have to keep it alive by acting every night different.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like a muscle memory thing, really. So, you know, once you do it enough times, your body kind of knows.
Yeah,
I would say
that makes sense. Now, how many performers are in Echo? About how many?
There's about 53 cast members.
Oh wow! Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, from all different countries. So we have some Americans, Canadians, people from France. So we have a whole troupe from Ethiopia and quite a few Russians. So. Mm.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So definitely reflective of much of the world. Mm-hmm. Neil, is there anything you won't do? So I know, Philip, you said you're not juggling
knives. I'll try anything
once, you're not juggling fire. Is there something where you're like, no, I'm not swinging from that. I'm not doing.
Well, in terms of, you know, high flying things, that's something that I like. But in terms of juggling and object manipulation, I have zero skills in those areas. So, you know, what Philippe and I do are very different. Yeah. But
what's the feeling like flying through the air like that?
Oh, it's exhilarating.
Yeah.
Really, because we're 30 feet above the stage. We have safety loops on, but we're spinning, we're up so high. And sometimes for me, it's fun to concentrate on different parts of the theater, like the stage or the person, my partner, who's on the other end mm-hmm. of the apparatus with me, or out to the audience, or the lights.
Yeah.
Because there's really so much to see.
Right. Yeah. Because I was like, you must feel free just to be able just to glide through the air like that.
Yeah. It does feel that way. So yeah. That's why I enjoy it so much.
Yeah. And my last question actually is, what do you love most about what you do? Who wants to go first?
For me, it's seeing the people up close, and we see their expression when they're watching you and the act. And at the end, we all mm-hmm. bow together to the public. So we all see their faces and they're super happy. The children are clapping. So they want to do high five with us. So I think for me, it's this part.
And really, Philippe couldn't have said it any better. But I love working with, you know, so many talented people around the world. And there's so many nationalities and languages represented. So it's really great to hear other people's stories.
Well, Neil and Philip, thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
That was acrobat Neil Quarter and juggler Philip Zubui. See them at the Cirque du Soleil show Echo. That's under the Big Top at Oracle Park in San Francisco from November 20th to January 18th. And tickets are on sale now. You can visit KLW's Instagram page to see a video of Philip and Neil performing at our downtown San Francisco spot. It was so much fun. Our handle is at KLW Public Media, and we'll have a link on our webpage. Coming up, we're strutting over to the dance poles in our sexy heels at Club Oasis for one last time. Don't slide away. We'll be back. Sound show with Janae Darden. Hey, I like that music. The beloved queer nightclub Oasis will close its doors for good at the end of the year. For a decade, the San Francisco venue has been a space to party, be entertained, and allow queer artists to do their thing, like how they do in the show Strut, a queer pole cabaret. I'm reading this differently because the music is so sexy. The production is a combination of pole dance and drag and burlesque for some of the best in the Bay Area. And their last Oasis show is this Sunday evening. And here with me are competitive pole dancers. Oh, now the music's gone. Okay, Joshua Chaffer-Dunny. Hello.
Hello.
Who founded Strut, and Olivia Day, the show's producer. Hello. We were having fun before this all started. So welcome to you both.
Hi. Hello. Hi, Janae. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, they had like, it's really like, da-da-da music. So that's why I was like trying to get into it.
I can't wait to listen to it afterwards.
Then it faded out.
Anyway. I mean, we were doing some splits on you earlier. We brought the pole to the studio for sure.
Yeah, we took some pictures and they did the splits on me. It was so fabulous. I'll post that on my Instagram. Anyway, so you both are, first of all, phenomenal. Good to see you again, Joshua, because I've interviewed you before, 2022. So it's good to see you again.
Yes.
So nice to meet you, Olivia.
So nice meeting you.
Yes. So just give people just a little background. So Joshua, you have won a national pole dancing champion. So you're not playing. Okay. Olivia, you won medals in pole dancing competitions. So you're not playing. Okay. So how did Strut come together? Where did Strut come from, aside from, you know, y'all being champions?
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I've been performing in the Bay Area for a really long time. And then last year at Oasis, I was at Moist, which was an all-black burlesque show produced by Redbone. Okay. And she's like an incredible local performer producer. And I was there with my partner, Sanjay. And, you know, at some point during the show, we were just like so blown away. And I leaned over and I was like, why isn't there a pole show at Oasis? And Sanjay said something like, you know, because you haven't done it yet. And I was just like, what? You know, and I'd only performed at that point. I hadn't ever thought of actually producing. Mm-hmm. And he was producing a queer South Asian party at Oasis at that time. And he pushed me into it and connected me with the people at Oasis. And so then, I got the first one going. And that happened last May. And it was just a really great experience, was really well received. And then, like earlier this year, Olivia reached
out. Yeah, I reached out. I had been on maternity leave with my second child when Joshua hosted the first strut. And we've known each other for 10 plus years through pole dance and even getting to work together to some extent through in the pole dance community. And and so I wasn't able to attend the show. I just knew it was happening. And I was so excited because I've been just an Oasis, I would say, regular since 2019, except for when we couldn't go during the pandemic. Yeah. And so to see these things that I loved coming together, the Oasis queer community, pole performance, and Joshua at the heart of it, I just reached out as I was getting back into the swing of things and was like, hey, like, are you going to do that again? And do you need any help? Can I help? I love what you did. And I want to help however I can. And Joshua said, well, maybe, like, have you ever thought about co-producing? And I was like, well, great, let's go. I thought about producing shows a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But again, pre-pandemic, and then had two kids during the pandemic. Like, it's just been such a journey. And so for me to be able to, contribute to this really incredible vision that Joshua had has just been such a delight.
So do you do choreography for the show?
Yeah, I choreograph our group number. I do have a choreography background. I grew up dancing I went to an all-women's college and choreographed for our dance company. My first show there, I got to perform in something by, I don't know if you know the zombie movie director George Romero. Mm-hmm. His daughter Tina Romero was also in our dance company and choreographed a really amazing like zombie routine.
Oh,
and
cool.
It just like, I feel like all of these things keep coming together, this like fun, playful, queer performance. And so yeah, getting to do it with Strut is such a blast.
And so on the Eventbrite, for the event, it says that Strut, we embody life, death, and rebirth. Our performers are celebrating the full spectrum of what it means to be alive. We've all made it this far, and we hope this show fills you up to keep on going. And that's a deep statement for cabaret pole dancers, burlesque. So both of you, tell me, what does that mean to you, that message? That's a powerful message.
So, you know, for me, like, you know, I grew up doing other performing and dance as well. And like, for me, like, as a queer person, being able to put queer art out into the world and be seen in that way was something that like wasn't always accessible or didn't exist. And especially in the dance world, like those opportunities weren't there for me until I found pole and I found pole performing. And so like, you know, for me, like, the political, bringing in the reality of our lives, our lived experiences to our art and to our dancing, and especially to like an art form like pole, where it has historically kind of been boxed into like, oh, it's this, you know, one specific thing that you might see in like strip clubs, which, you know, I've danced in clubs. We love our strippers, our sex workers. And it's like you can express the full human experience through sensual movement and through pole. Like, you don't have to change the movement style. And so when I created Strut, I wanted to like give queer pole dancers a space to be able to like bring themselves and their vision to the stage and like to really be seen. And so what we've done with each show is kind of have like an overall theme and then let the performers kind of bring themselves and the lens of their queerness and their lived experience through that theme to the stage and to their act. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, in March we did, it was like things were heavy. And so people kind of did harder, sharper numbers. They were like more political. In June, we needed some freedom. So we said, all right, let's like let loose, go crazy, be wild again. And then just like, taking in this whole year, like a lot has happened in the world. There's been a lot just the last few years that we've all been processing, like individually, locally, globally, and it's just been a lot.
Yeah, it's been this year has been adventurous.
Yeah,
to say the least, definitely, and turbulent and wild. Yeah,
and so with Oasis closing, I just kind of wanted to say like let's honor that, and I really wanted to take pole performing like to another level. And I wanted to take this as an opportunity to kind of give both myself and like other performers space to be like, I love all of the sexy, I love all of the fun, I love all of the wild. And also like, what if we wanted to say something more? What if we wanted to like really put just everything out there?
Yeah.
And so that's what the show is, theme is kind of about. And the acts have been coming in, and like, it is literally the full spectrum. We have serious numbers, funny numbers, we have like everything in between. So yeah,
and I feel like it when we looked at Oasis closing, which is like absolutely gutting, it also brought up a lot around how the queer community in general, there's so much like really living life fully. There is the ending of things, sometimes in right. really, really traumatizing, painful, challenging ways that require mourning. And then there also is this constant reinvention and like ownership and redefinition of how to be in relationship with yourself and your community. And so just looking at the performers, the creatives of Oasis, and how everyone has been going through this period of mourning around this thing that they love, and also looking at how they will be able to channel that creativity, that joy, that care they have for each other into new spaces. It's incredibly inspiring. And I feel like, as we've talked about, you know, the light, cheery theme for this show being life, death, and rebirth, like we really have been looking at what that means to us, inviting our performers to engage with that. And as you said, really like celebrate that whole spectrum, the pain, the growth, the joy of what we have been experiencing and will continue to.
Yeah. Wow. If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with Joshua Chaffer-Dunny and Olivia Day. They're the producers of Strut, a queer pole cabaret, and it's happening at Oasis for a final time at Oasis in San Francisco on November 9th. My apologies if I stumbled over your name, Joshua.
No, you got it.
Okay, I got it. Okay, because I remember from last time. I just want
to
make sure.
You are all good. Yeah. So it was smooth.
Okay, so tell us, what can people expect? Who's on the lineup? Who's sliding down the pole and da-da-da-da and all that, doing all the good stuff? Who bringing all the good stuff on stage?
I'm so excited about this. I want to start by saying our host and, you know, burlesque star this time around is Edie Eve, who is a really beloved performer. She just performed with Redbone at Cobweb Cabaret, which was really fun. And we've had the chance to perform together. She's like an absolute star, and so we're really excited for the energy that Edie is going to bring. And do you want to speak more to just this incredible cast?
I mean, yeah, you know, we have a lot of people who have been in Strut before, and some newcomers, some people who were supposed to have been in it. I don't know, we have Judy Gray, I don't even
legend.
Know legend, like literally go on Instagram and you'll understand.
Okay.
We have Vicky Cristina Barcelona, an incredible local Puerto Rican drag queen.
Yeah, I've heard of her. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so she'll be performing. So we always have some burlesque and drag in the show as well. We have live vocals, live singing as well. Like, you know, we've really tried to elevate the show. And then, yeah, we have Sherman Yu, who won third place at PSO Nationals, which is a national pole competition. And we have Femme Pole. She's been like an Oakland-based pole dancer who just brings like really amazing, creative, fun storytelling acts.
Oh, fun. I love storytelling.
Yeah, we have Leah Maria of Flex Vertical Theater, one of the co-owners and founders of Flex Vertical Theater over in Berkeley. And like that is a full circle moment because, you know, she was a producer that booked me when I was starting out, and now I get to like have her in the show, and I got to have Ms. K, the other co-owner and producer of Flex Vertical Theater, in the show as well. So it is a stacked cast.
It's been hard putting
the run of show together because everyone is just like top
tier. It says on Eventbrite some of the best in the Bay who do this kind of work, or this kind of performance.
Yeah, it's amazing. I also want to shout out, I mean, just there are so many amazing repeat performers. We have Sade, who's in our cast. You've performed together at the Exploratorium. Vix Nolan, they are perfect in every way, and also has kittened our last show after having already performed and started in a prior one. And we have a new cast member too, who came referred by some like really amazing dancers with us before from Black Femme Parties, and we're just really, really excited. Yeah.
No, it sounds exciting. It sounds really, really good. We only have a few more minutes, but I wanted to ask, you know, especially with Oasis closing again, which is so sad, what's the state of the queer burlesque and cabaret scene in San Francisco? Where do you think it will go now with losing this venue?
I mean, we're going to take a little rest and then we're going to start looking at other venues. So if anyone listening has a venue, knows of venues, is interested in like lifting up the local pole scene, reach out to us and help us out, because honestly, you know, like things are changing, and we just need to like continue building really strong community networks and connections. And I think there's a lot out there that we don't know that exists. So mm-hmm. we're going to be looking at different venues and looking at what is coming next.
Yeah. And Oasis, while Oasis is closing, Oasis Arts, the nonprofit, is living on mm-hmm. and looking for ways to support this amazing creative community that they have built in finding other venues, like new formats. Mm-hmm. And so love that team and excited to talk to them more. And just, you know, I think Joshua and I have talked a bit about what we love about this art form. We see that, you know, like Joshua did this beautiful piece to a Rachmaninoff performance by Yuzha Wong. And I would love to manifest Joshua performing that on stage at the symphony with her someday. Like, I feel like there's so many things we want to do with this, and I'm excited to see where we go next.
Yeah. So Strut is not going away.
Strut is not going away, and there will be more shows. I've wanted to like choreograph and produce like pole ballets for a long time. I want to start doing that. Oh, I would love to work, like, you know, Leah said, with like the symphony, with like other local dance companies. I think pole is at a place where like it can be integrated into other dance companies, and like there's so much amazing art already happening in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So like I said, reach out. We'll reach out. But like, I think it's like, you know, we've worked really hard as a community in the Bay Area to build this incredible pole community and both performance and studios. And I think it's just like, it's time. Like, we're ready to like really step into the light. And like, so many people want to like tell their story and be seen and express themselves in this way.
Yeah. It's interesting how to use the sexy to talk about this, you know, the struggle, the mm-hmm. social issues that are happening.
Yeah.
And that you can, because some people wouldn't think you can use that art form for that, but you totally can. Yeah. We have about 30 seconds. What have you learned from each other working together? 30 seconds.
Wow.
Doo-doo.
I've learned so much from Leah. I was a little baby when I started. Leah was a creative director that was working at like Apple and big tech companies. And just like, she has taught me so much about everything through the process. And then now getting to like kind of work with her as an equal was just like, I mean, my life has just been like strong women lifting me up and supporting me and teaching me. And I'm just so grateful for it.
That is so wonderful. Thank you. Working with Joshua is an absolute dream. As an educator, as a human, the way that you show up and engage and the art that you bring out of people, that you like really see in people and encourage and hone, it's just really tremendous how you have influenced every single member of our cast and our community, and the audiences love to see it. I love working with you. It's really, really special to do this with you.
Thank you.
I'm feeling the love. I'm feeling the love. Well, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
All right. I've been speaking with Joshua Chaffer-Dunny and Olivia Day. They are the producers of Strut, a queer pole cabaret. All right. That music's back. See it at Oasis in San Francisco on November 9th. And next up, a group of writers and travel journalists are among the speakers sharing some fun San Francisco history in a new series of events. Da-da-da-da-da. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. The city of San Francisco is so rich, rich in culture, rich in art and innovation, rich in rich people, yes, and rich in history too. But there's so much we still don't know about the city's past. Well, there's a new speaker series called Making History Fun Again, and it features authors, journalists, and historians sharing all kinds of San Francisco history, and the topics range from city's cocktail culture to music. And I'm interested in learning about one of the last living men who served time in Alcatraz. The monthly series begins on November 14th and 15th at the Cliff Royal Sonesta Hotel in Union Square, and it is free. And here to tell us more are Molly Blaisdell. She's the event producer and award-winning travel journalist Ruth Carlson. Hello. Welcome, ladies.
Hey, good afternoon, Janae.
Good afternoon. So hello, Molly. Do some people know your voices? Molly, hey.
Hey.
Okay, Ruth, hey.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Okay. Everybody's here. I'm excited you're here. I thought this series was a great idea. I still think history's fun. Who doesn't think history's fun?
Well, we're making history right now.
We are making history. So where did the idea for this series come from?
Well, the Clift Hotel is legendary, first of all. If people are not familiar with it, it was built in 1915. And it opened to accommodate guests of the World's Fair in 1915. And shortly thereafter, right, the day after Prohibition, you know, was over. Yeah. The Redwood Room was there and opened its doors. It's built from one single redwood tree. So it's a miracle that the day after Prohibition, wow, it was able to open its doors. But that's that. Those are the facts. So with all this history and just great legendary status of the hotel, we wanted to make history fun again, yeah, and, you know, make it relevant. And there's so many great topics, as you've already previously indicated. So we're bringing those to life.
Yeah, no, I just think it's great, especially that it's free too as well. So, and this is for all ages, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, the foyer
families.
Yeah, and grown people learning history with a cocktail. You can't get that in school.
And they're going to have special cocktails for the
and
event.
There are special, course, historically minded cocktails.
Yes, yeah. I saw that. So, Ruth, how did you get pulled into this, and why did you want to be a part of this?
Molly's good at pulling people into
Molly
things.
Is good at pulling people into this.
Well, I was so honored. I mean, to speak at the Redwood Room, that's a huge honor. I've been in the Bay Area for 50 years, and I know about the Redwood Room, and I was very excited about it. So I wrote two books, Secret San Francisco, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and Secret California, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. Yeah. And so Molly said, how about you come on along with another few authors, Alex Scott, who wrote Oldest San Francisco, mm-hmm, and Maria Lenhart wrote Lost Treasures of San Francisco. So the three of us are going to share what we learned writing the books, which was really fun. It was a great time.
And that's for the event that's on the 14th and the 15th.
Yes,
that's so
right.
You'll all be on a panel.
Yes, we're on the first panel.
And they are joined by Bill Baker on the Friday night, yes, November 14th. So the last living ex-con from Alcatraz will also be on the panel with them.
Yeah.
And he's got his own book out as well, but he's got some great stories to tell as well.
I can only imagine the stories that he had. And now he doesn't live in the Bay anymore, right?
Well, he lives predominantly here, but his home is in Ohio.
Okay. Okay.
So, yeah, he makes a living by selling his books, and the best place to sell them on the island.
Yeah, and then when the tour is coming, I was reading, I just wanted, since you mentioned him, and I want to go back to you, Ruth. So yes, last living. His book is Alcatraz number 1259, which was what his number was when
Correct.
He was in Alcatraz. And I think he had went to prison for, he stole a car, and then he got arrested, I think in Oregon or something. And then, like, he ran out, he escaped prison, and then they captured him. And
well,
he,
look at you.
I
you
did
know.
My research. That's what I said. I was like, this is an interesting event. So I looked him up.
He is fascinating, and he's my old Papa Bear. So,
oh, okay, okay. Yeah. So you know him. All right. So, Ruth, okay, so you know all the secrets, or some of the secrets. That's why we had you on. We want you to spill the tea. So tell us about just some of the secret spots in San Francisco. I saw you in another interview. I didn't know that they do, you could tour the sewer in San Francisco.
Yes, you can. It's free.
And it's free.
Yes, they do that in Paris too, and I know a lot of people said, I didn't know you could do it in San Francisco, but yeah, you can. You could tour, and it's not stinky, and it's very interesting. In fact, our tour guide, he said, I used to be a lawyer. I wanted to do something that was meaningful, and so, because he talks about recycling. Everybody laughed at that when I said it at, when I spoke at another event, and I said, oh, I didn't know it was funny, but okay. there's all sorts of secrets. A lot of people think that San Francisco, a lot of architects think that we really invented the skyscraper because, Willis Polk built a building in the financial district they called it the Wall of Glass, and that was the first time a building was ever like that. The critics hated it, so Polk never did that again. But now the Architects Society, they have their headquarters there, and they say that was the first skyscraper, and they didn't replicate that. I think it was Chicago or New York, I think it was Chicago, for another 20 years. So it was groundbreaking at the time. The funny part was UC Berkeley commissioned the building. It was going to be an office for them, and they didn't have much money. So he had to do it on the cheap, and that's where he came up with that. Before that, his buildings were very fancy, very, you know.
Interesting.
It's
interesting. UC Berkeley's interesting, too, because UC Berkeley history show up in places that's not in Berkeley sometimes. Like, mm-hmm, this one, I've just done some background on UC Berkeley, yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other little spots you want to share?
Sure.
Everybody has a list.
There's so many spots.
And don't give away too many because we want people to go to the event.
Well, when you ride the cable cars, you may not know that Mick Jagger helped to save them.
Mick Jagger?
Yes. There was a time back in the 50s when they tried to get rid of them, and they were saved by a very strong woman. But in 1980, Dianne Feinstein got the Democratic Convention to come to San Francisco, mm-hmm. but the cable cars were a mess. They needed to be taken down for 2 years and repaired. And so a lot of people said, don't bring them back. We don't need them. They're too expensive. They're too much of a hassle. And she said, no. We have to have them back. And so she got Mick Jagger was in town for a concert. Mm-hmm. So she got him to stand on. They were getting fixed, so she got him to stand on one of the electric ones and got all the reporters there. And he said, well, once you get rid of them, you're never going to get them back. So... it worked.
I guess it worked. How did you even get into this? Like, how did you even get into? No, I love people that know things that where I'm like, how do you know that and why? But it's still important, right?
Well, for the book, I really put it out on social media, and that one thing led to another. Every time I talked to somebody, I got another thing. People love in San Francisco. Love San Francisco. I love San Francisco, and so they just kept. Leading me on to other things. And also, the San Francisco Library History Room is amazing.
It is. It is.
Yeah. That was a great resource, too. But it was really just social media, talking to people, and, you know, really being observant. I lived in the marina for years when I was young. I never noticed that there's this building where this this artist has all these really cool sculptures in his front yard. One of them, it's his mother, a sculpture of her. It looks like it's a real person. If you walk
it looks that real.
You do a double take. But, you know, if you just start, then he has all kinds of other crazy things there. But a lot of times, if you just keep your eyes open, you'd be amazed what you see.
It is true. In this city, when you're just walking around, you don't know what you're going to come upon. Yeah. Molly, so, you know, when I was looking at the press release about this event and so many different types of things you're going to be covering, what else can people expect just in the near future with this? Because I understand it's going to, so this event that Ruth's going to be part of is November 14th and 15th. And then afterwards, it's going to be monthly?
Yes, it'll be the third Thursday of every month starting in January. Uh-huh. And we've got several guests already lined up for the first 5 months of the year. We're going to have somebody talking about the history of, we've got Emperor Norton. Don't know if you're familiar with him and his history, but he's a character and is one of San Francisco's iconic legends.
Yeah.
So he's kind of rising from the dead to join us. We're going to have somebody talk about...
Is he alive? Is he...
Well, of course. Yeah,
he's rising from the dead. I'm like, hell, is he alive?
He's an impersonator. Okay. I'll spill the beans. He's not really still alive.
Okay, I'm about to say, it is San Francisco, so all kind of people are here.
You're right. He's a 250-year-old legend. And then we're going to have people talk on the history of rock and roll, the history of politics in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. The history of art, and then in April, of course, we'll have the history of the great 1906 earthquake and fire.
Wow.
And so that, because the earthquake happened in April of 06.
Right.
So, we've got a great lineup of speakers, and as you mentioned, it's free if you register.
Yes.
So there's an Eventbrite link that is available on the website, or you just go to Eventbrite and look for the Clift Hotel Speaker Series and register. But it is free. And then we're going to have a variety of different historic cocktails for people to enjoy time. Yeah.
I think that's just so, and like I said, again, it's great that you can bring the family there too as well. And Molly, do me a favor, just pull your mic a little closer. We want to make sure everybody can hear you. Thank you so much.
Sure.
If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with event producer Molly Blaisdell and travel journalist Ruth Carlson. They are part of the speaker series, Making History Fun Again. And it starts on November 15th, 14th and 15th at the Clift. At the Clift Royal Sonesta Hotel in San Francisco. And did I say, is it Sonesta or Sonista?
Sonesta, correct.
Sonesta, okay, just want to make sure. You know how sometimes when you live in somewhere for a long time and you may say the name wrong, and you've been saying it like it the whole time, and then you're like, wait a minute, then you find out, oh, that's not...
You got it, girl.
we could put that in history, too, as well. I want to ask you, Ruth, what got you into travel journalism?
Oh, that's a very good question. I worked at KCBS and Cron TV when I was young, and then I got into public relations. I worked for colleges. Mm-hmm. And my sister lived in Paris, and I used to go see her all the time.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, I asked my friend, who was an editor at the time at the Mercury News, would you be interested in a story about bargain shopping in Paris? He's like, sure, I'll look at it. Well, it was this huge front page spread of the feature section. And then I found, oh, you could actually be a, you know, freelance travel writer.
Yeah.
So then I started doing it. I got vacations a lot when I worked for college and holidays. So I started doing that all the time, and it was so much fun. I had a blast, and then I got to do it full-time 15 years ago, but I was doing it part-time for a while.
Yeah, so you're like, oh, I can make this into a career.
Yeah.
That's such a journalist thing. It's always like, how'd you get into it? How'd you get into journalism, you know, when you talk to different journalists and travel writers. And Miley, you're so social. So, like, I can tell PR is event producing is so you. How did you get into this industry? What drew you in?
Well, it's interesting because it kind of ties back to a question you asked earlier for us to maybe be prepared for. But when I was going to college, I actually thought I might want to go into politics. So I did an internship with Dianne Feinstein when she was mayor of San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
So we're going back a few years here.
Yeah, just a few years.
And so I worked for her press secretary at City Hall. And that kind of got my love and interest in media.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dianne Feinstein, as I'm watching her be mayor of this city, I was able to sit in on her weekly staff meetings with all the management.
Wow.
And it was like babysitters. She was like a babysitter. And I thought, God, is this what politics is?
Oh, my goodness.
I don't want to grow up and have to take care of adults, right?
So oh, my goodness.
I went the other direction and went behind the scenes with a public relations career. And then tourism was a natural because I'm a San Franciscan. I'm a native San Franciscan. And I've been traveling all my life. So it just... they kind of molded together, you know?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
And especially with what you're doing too as well, like to be able to get back to San Francisco and just with this history. And again, I keep saying it's free because I know a lot of people are struggling right now. And, you know, to have to participate in something free and informative and fun that's in San Francisco. So I just really appreciate. I don't know who the sponsor is, but I'm
the hotel.
The hotel.
The Clift Hotel and the Redwood Room. Yeah.
Okay. Shout out to the Clift Hotel for making this, you know, available to so many other people. So I know we have a few more minutes. Now, I asked you all before the show. I was like, tell us some of your favorite San Francisco history. Okay, so you were up front watching Mayor Feinstein, then Mayor Feinstein. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And then to compare politics to babysitting scares me a little bit.
Sorry.
I mean, you're being honest.
It's real.
So you saw so much.
Oh, so much. It was so fascinating, though, I'll tell you. I mean, it was... the best education I got, the best internship, because I would have been miserable in politics.
Yeah.
And it helped direct me into the PR side of things. Yeah. So I'm grateful.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Ruth? What's some of your favorite, like, San Francisco history? Well, I know you love this city, too.
I do. Well, just talking about Dianne Feinstein, I love a story about Tony Bennett and, you know, of course, his famous song, I Left My Heart in San Francisco. Believe it or not, there was a time people didn't want that to be the official song. Herb Cain, Warren Hinkle, the two columnists forever at the newspapers, they wanted it to be San Francisco from the movie with Clark Gable. And Dianne Feinstein wanted, when the cable cars came back, we're going back to that, she wanted Tony Bennett, who was staying at the Fairmont, to come down and ride the cable car with her when they came back on the road. And he was afraid because the Gay Men's Chorus went to City Hall, they belted out San Francisco, and it was like a riot. And he says, I'm not leaving the hotel room. So he didn't go out there. He didn't go that time. But, you know, now, of course, there's a statue of him there. And San Francisco is the official song. But I Left My Heart in San Francisco is the official ballad. And eventually, I guess he did come out. But ever since then, he's had good receptions. But, yeah, he had to hide in his hotel room.
I love that. It was like a battle. I'm thinking, like, I love hip-hop. So I'm like, it's not a rap battle. But it almost kind of was.
Yeah.
It's so San Francisco, the Gay Men's Chorus. Like, we're going to sing San Francisco. Oh, my goodness. That's so funny.
And then, believe it or not, they wanted to dam up the bay at one point. Because they wanted the water to go to the farmers down in Central California.
Oh, okay.
And so they were a powerful politician in Sacramento. So the Army Corps of Engineers was brought in, and they said, okay, let's build a huge replica of the water system in the bay. And it's still there. It's in Sausalito. Yeah. You can see it. It's the Bay Model Visitor Center. It's really cool. It's like the size of a football field.
Wow.
And you can walk around and see it. And they did that, and they said, that was before computers, so they had to actually make it. And they said, yeah, this isn't going to work. So thank goodness we saved the bay.
Yeah. That's why I said there's so much. That's why I said in the intro, there's so much history here. It's so rich. And there's so many people here. And because people are so, like, you know, so diverse here, it's just so much history and so many stories. We have about a minute left. You both, long time. You're from San Francisco. You're a long time San Francisco resident. You know, what is special about this city?
everything.
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, you can rattle it off, right? The Golden Gate Bridge, the Presidio, the zoo out at Ocean Beach, the, you know, the Coit Tower even is an amazing feat in and of itself. Mission Dolores, you know? I mean, history spans so far back. But one of the things I love about our city is, if you think of Levi Strauss, and everybody in the world knows that name, right? He was a pioneer, and this city is always and will always be full of pioneers. Yeah. So whenever we get a little down on ourselves that things are tanking a little bit, don't worry, because we're pioneers and we come back. And so all these stories are really born from pioneers.
Well, and it's happening now. I mean, Jackson Square, the AI movement, the financial district. And to me, it's the characters, it's the beauty of San Francisco, and it's the music. And there's all these new music places in North Beach, new jazz places.
We're living in a kind of like the Laskis talking about rebirth with their show, and we're seeing like a rebirth here with San Francisco. It's constantly changing. Thank you both. I have enjoyed talking to you both. I can't wait to attend one of your series events. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Janae. It was a pleasure.
Yes. I've been speaking with event producer Molly Blaisdell and travel journalist Ruth Carlson. They're part of the series Making History Fun Again, and it starts on November 14th and 15th at the Cliff Royal Sonesta Hotel in San Francisco. And after that, you can catch it every third Thursday of the month. It's free to attend, but you must RSVP online, and we'll have a link on our webpage. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer Porfirio Rangel, board operator Damian Miner, sound engineers James Roland and Gandhi Joe Johnson, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. Thank you, and thank you for tuning in. While we're on the subject of history, this Sunday at 3:30 p.m., the Grand Lake Theater is screening the documentary Greater Than Ourselves. It's about the history of my sorority, Sigma Gamma Rho, and it was produced by the late Oakland singer and artist Tamika Williams Clark, and it's a fascinating story. We'll have a link on our website for you to buy tickets, because you can't buy it at the theater. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.